Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 2nd of October, Anno Domini 2010, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 2 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, stuff to choose, nothing to lose.
You hope.
Hang on to your shoes. All right. New web browser market share stats are out. This past month has seen a decline in the overall market share of Internet Explorer, but breaking things down by version shows that more users are adopting the latest generation of web browsers, whether it's Internet Explorer, Firefox, or Chrome. Microsoft's Internet Explorer declined again in overall market share for the first time in a few months. The browser as a whole, all versions combined, lost 0.75%, which doesn't sound like a lot, but is in fact millions and millions and millions, not billions, but millions and millions of people. Chrome 6 had by far the largest gain over the previous month, a swift rise of 4.6% over the previous month. Apparently, the vast majority of Chrome users willingly embraced the latest browser and made the switch. Firefox users followed the same trajectory. The latest official release, Firefox 3.6, went up 0.25%, and Firefox 4, which is still only in beta, went up 0.08%. Again, they'll sound like very small numbers, but they're millions of people. Yeah, even Internet Explorer 9 is riding the cutting-edge browser popularity wave. It has only been 2 weeks since Microsoft publicly announced the beta of Internet Explorer 9 at a media event in San Francisco. In that brief period, though, the beta of Microsoft's next major update to the Internet Explorer web browser has already been downloaded more than 6 million times. Some of that upswing may be a function of the success of Windows 7 and an increase in PC sales. Users who have clung to outdated browsers like IE6 would suddenly have IE8 by default on a new Windows 7 machine, and in the event that the user chooses not to use Internet Explorer, the likelihood is that they will install the latest version of whatever browser it is they opt to install. Regardless of the reasons behind the numbers, new web technologies need new web browsers, so the transition to cutting-edge web browsers benefits developers as well as everyone else who surfs the web. Our question to you this week on our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's bytes with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, which browser do you use most? And the choices are Chrome, Firefox, Internet Explorer, Safari, and whatever is on my phone. I'm sure someone will write in and say you left out Lynx and a bunch of others, and you know what? I don't care.
Hello.
This is not actually the most scientific poll you will take this week, probably.
You sure on that?
Even if it's the only poll you take this week, it's not the most scientific. But when you're done with that poll, I know you'll have something to say. Probably not really connected to the poll, but that's okay. So if you look at the yellow box underneath and click on Give Us Your Opinion, it will take you to my website, AskNick.com.
That's AskNick.com.
Did she get it right last week?
Yo, she was great last week.
Oh, good.
I didn't test her by then going,
that's AskNick.com.
Again, but she got it right the first time. You, I don't mind jumping in whenever I feel like it and just making it happen. There you go. Well done. Opinion question is, why do you use the browser you use? What led you to make that particular choice? And that's our question.
Anything against Microsoft.
Yeah, right. And that's our question to you. Why do you use the browser you use? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, toll free at 1-800-790-0415.
Well, one thing we should get into before we start getting into the calls and everything else, reminding folks that that time of year is coming up.
Yes, it is.
And by that, I mean, folks, we're getting back into pledge drive time. And this is where we come to you folks twice a year and ask for your support. As you know, this is a member-supported radio station. So that means we have to come to you twice a year to ask you to help support us and the great programming that goes on here at Jazz 90.1. Right now, they've got an early bird special going on, and they've got some bonus gifts. If you want, go to the web, and you can check out some of that stuff. You can also sign up for your either renewing, new membership, or whatever, extending. You can go to the web and do that very securely. Or, you know, give us a call here and get in on that great free gift that they're offering. But it's through your support, like I said, that's going to, one, see how fast we can get through this drive. That's going to be the key because, you know, as this goes on, trying to get, I know times are tight now, but folks, you know, we need to have you come and help support us.
Yep. And, of course, two, is we need to beat the polka band. We need to beat the polka guys. They beat us every year, and it's embarrassing. You know, we talked about this last week. We talked about how the drive is coming up and that you should start saving your pennies. Because we really, really, really want your support. This is, you know, I don't need or mean to be crass about it, but the reality is that this is one of the ways that any radio station decides who's up and down in their estimation, what's going to happen to who for what. And so we would very, very much appreciate it if you would, if you've got the money already, please.
Yes.
Feel free to pledge early and often. It's the Chicago style pledging. Pledge early and often.
We will not.
$100 this week, $100 next week, $100 the week after that. I don't know how you can go wrong. It's a perfect number to do. But we're going to go to the phones right now. We're going to talk to.
I couldn't pronounce. The guy said the name of the city. He is in PA.
Okay. Carl, where are you calling from?
Pottstown, Pennsylvania.
Pottstown.
Pots or pucks?
Potts, P-O-T-T-A.
Oh, okay. So I still got a sinus cold, and my hearing is like, right now, even you, Nick, you sound like you're way off in the distance.
Mentally, I am. So perhaps you're just being psychic. So, Carl, is that anywhere near near Pottsville?
We're south of Pottsville, yes.
So that guy Potts got around, right?
I don't know who Pott was, but doggone him, he started a lot of places. I know Pottsville, PA, of course, because of the Yingling Brewery.
Well, he said he just legalized it in California.
Yeah, he did. Okay, Carl, let's see if we can slowly reel this back into the realm of computers by taking your question, shall we?
Yes, I have Windows XP Home Edition, and I always have automatic updates on, so I thought everything was fine and I was all up to date. But then I brought up the System Properties box under the General tab, and it says I only have Service Pack 2, and I can't understand why, and if so, how do I get 3?
You can you can still go to the website and for the updates and have it install Service Pack 3.
It's also possible
you
that
you definitely want Service Pack 3 right now.
Yeah, it's also possible that at some point it asked you for Service Pack 3 and you said ignore, and so it has been. Because there were a lot of initial problems with Service Pack 3 2 years ago when it came out.
Yeah, when it first came out, there was a lot of issues with it, and we weren't recommending it. We were telling folks, you know, selectively go in and select stuff as you needed it. But now it's one of them you've got to have because there's still a lot of security holes and everything else.
And they have stopped supporting Service Pack 2 and have stopped releasing updates for it.
So I just go to the Microsoft Update site?
Yep.
Yeah, windowsupdate.microsoft.com, and it should be listed there as
That'll get you there.
Okay, I'll do that. Thank you very much.
All right, let us know how you make out, please.
Thanks, I will.
We had a customer this week want to buy a new computer. For their proprietary software they use in their company, and it only supports Windows XP and Office 2007.
Wow!
Neither of which you can buy anymore.
Right.
So what he was able to find out is we called Microsoft, and you buy Windows 7 and Office 2010, and then when you go to install it, you find an old disk that you probably have.
Right.
And then call Microsoft with your 7 license, and they'll give you an XP downgrade license code.
Wow. And now invalidates the Windows 7 license.
Yeah. So later on, if you do want to upgrade to 7,
you call
Microsoft again and say, I'm upgrading to 7, and here's the code, and cancel the XP code.
Okay, they
and
really the need to go Office. Find the people who wrote this code
yeah.
and get them to upgrade
and
it.
They're working on it.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. They're working on it. Mm-hmm.
Well, he said the one problem with Office 2010 is that it doesn't support compatibility mode that 2007 does.
Right.
And their program relies on compatibility mode.
Oh, so they really wrote it for DOS.
Probably.
Yes.
Well, I just ran into that, too. I had a client come in and had an old Well, yeah, they said, works great under Windows 95. It's a baseball card program.
Mm-hmm.
And I was able to, and they're running Vista.
Mm-hmm.
And trying to get it running. So I did what they asked. I, you know, worked on it. Excuse me. And I got the program cranking and coming up and all that. But then the other person comes back and says, but all the cards in that are in there. I says, that I can't help you with. I says, you know, well, I can. I says, if you want me to take the time to learn the program.
Right.
And, you know, go in there and do the
retype
FAQs.
It all.
Yeah. And, you know, find out where these databases are. I says, I can do that. But initially your main concern was getting the program up and running. I didn't know if there was data or anything else that was supposed to be in there. Oh, yeah, well, I typed in all these others. I said, well, if you want, I can go looking, but I have to charge you for that.
Right.
Well, why?
Right.
I go, well, it's not a standard program. I mean, I did what you asked, and I got it installed. I brought it up, and, you know, everything's working as far as that. And as far as any data missing, that's another issue, and you've got to go looking at the FAQs and maybe going to the online help or asking the tech support there to walk you through and pulling that in.
And apparently the old version, the old program doesn't have an export. We're running into that with an access, a custom access database at another customer, and they've got, you know, 10 years worth of information in it.
Mm-hmm.
There's no export command.
Ouch.
So we can't upgrade them to a new database.
And of course it's 10 years old, so whoever wrote it is probably living in a mountaintop
and
in Oregon
three companies
somewhere.
Ago, but they said they just ran into them at the grocery store the other day. We're still using your program. Oh, my God. You know, that's something I threw together in a weekend.
Yeah, yeah, right. Right. Well, I gotta tell you guys my saga of the week.
Okay. Ooh.
This is a good saga.
Got to get some sad music out there.
Yeah, really sad music. On Sunday.
Incredible Hulk theme.
Dun, yeah. Dun, dun. On Sunday, I had a normal day and there we go. All right, kiddies, gather around. Put on, grab your crying towels and your drool cups and gather around in a...
Yeah, I try to accommodate.
In a standard shooting position around the rocking chair, because when I'm done with this, you're either going to want to hug me or kill me. Because it's time for Story Hour with Uncle Nick. Here it is. Sunday, I did my usual morning ablutions, and the toilet was clogged. So I tried to plunge it, and I spent the whole day at it. Monday, we called a plumber, used the closet auger and everything else. Couldn't get it. Called a plumber. As it turns out, our neighbor has a wisteria bush on the other side of our driveway. For at least the last 40 or 50 years, We also have the downspout, which is original to the house, 1898, is clay, porous clay.
Ooh.
So this wisteria bush had worked its way in through the clay and grew through our entire waste pipe system.
Get out.
Our entire waste pipe system. Ouch. So for all the years my neighbor has been trying to kill the wisteria, we've been fertilizing it.
No lie, very well, too.
Very, very well.
And no wonder it's growing that way.
Yeah.
So we finally called a plumber who came and ripped out all the pipe and put... I mean, we've got a picture of him with like a 6-foot length that's taller than he is of root. And that's not all of it. That's just one piece.
One section of it.
So that's all fine. And normally that would not have been a big deal because Elaine would be home all week and I could go to work and that would be great. Unfortunately, on Monday... night, Amelia, who's in Rockford, Illinois, about 1,000 miles away, had an emergency appendectomy.
Get out!
So Elaine flew out to Illinois. I stayed home from work while the plumbers tore my entire house apart.
Whoa. Wait a minute. Before we get it, how's your daughter?
She's fine. She's absolutely fine. She had been at the place last week. At the emergency room last week because she's a theater major. She was building a set. She got an inch and a half long sliver in her leg, splinter. And, of course, it's plywood, so when they tried to pick it out, it left parts.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, a little piece shredded.
You know all about that.
Oh,
so
yeah,
they picked all that out. She had 3 stitches, right?
Okay.
Here she has her appendix out, and they glued it shut.
Yeah.
Yeah. They did it laparoscopically because it hadn't burst yet.
Okay.
In fact, she goes in. She goes over to the health center, right? And
see, you've got...
Steve's glued together.
I've got to change my bandages.
We don't really want to look. Thanks. Appreciate the thought.
We can YouTube it.
Yeah, exactly. So they've got she goes over to the health center and tells the lady what's going on. And the lady says, well, classically, these are the symptoms of appendicitis. So let's go to the emergency room. So she goes to the emergency room. They sit around for hours, of course, because it's only an emergency.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, they take all her vitals and they do all of that stuff. And they said, well, we're going to do a CT scan. So they take her and they do the CTs. They give her the milkshake, the shamrock shake thing
mm-hmm.
to drink. Yeah. And they check that out. And then the doctor comes back and says, you know what? We're not waiting for the results. We're going to admit you. So they admit her. Mm-hmm. The results come back and the guy says, yeah, let's prep you right now. Now, unfortunately, you have to have an empty stomach. So they had to pump her stomach.
Oh.
Yeah. So then she gets they bump her stomach. They put her out first. God bless them.
Yeah.
Right? And so then, because they were going to anesthetize her anyway for the other. So mm-hmm. they did that first. Then they took the thing out laparoscopically. Then the poor kid, she's got 100 million friends. God bless her. They're all coming to visit her. And all she really wants to do is sleep. But the doctor, I talked to the doctor right over on the phone. And you know, he's going, your daughter is amazing. She understands everything we're doing. She's asked intelligent questions. She's chipper. She's bright. She's not scared. I said, Doc, this isn't her first rodeo. She's been in and out of the hospital for most of her life.
Yeah.
So she really does know what's going on.
She knows the dance floor.
Yeah, she really does. And so at one point the doctor says, yeah, I came into the room and she was chit-chatting with her friends and smiling and laughing and everything else. And I was giving her meds. And I said, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10, how much does it hurt? She said, oh, about an 8. And he said, at first they didn't believe her.
Until he came over and he ripped off her face.
Yeah, right. And so, no, but that's, you know, my daughter has a high tolerance for pain, and she just knows how to, I mean, she's lived with it all her life.
Yeah.
She knows how to.
Well, with the stomach and all that.
Right. So she's fine. My wife was there. God bless my sister-in-law who gave her frequent flyer miles. So with the plane didn't cause us anything. God bless Karen Larson. Amelia's new best friend in the whole world is Rayanne, who's in school with her.
Mm-hmm.
Her mother and father, Karen and Scott, were kind enough to take my wife in. They live in Rockford.
Oh, cool.
They're local. So they took my wife in and gave her a room. And so that was great. And Elaine was there for most of a week, being the mom, which she loved. And but that was my week. And so I'm at home not hearing anything, of course, while that's all going on. But that was my week, so I didn't get a lot of computery stuff done this week at all. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 20 minutes after the hour, and we are Sound Bites right here on, now pay attention to this, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Hello, this is Paul Conley. Join me early on Monday mornings from 1 a.m. to 6 a.m. on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. Hey, have you got an Android phone? Did you install apps from the Android market?
I know somebody does.
Yes, you do. Congratulations. You've been named the mayor of We Know Where You Went and What You Did Last Week. Even if you've never used services like Foursquare or Facebook Places or Google Latitude to announce your physical location to the world, the apps you have installed may be capturing this information and sharing it with advertisers without your knowledge or consent. A study by researchers at Duke University, Penn State, and Intel Research Labs has revealed that Android apps are collecting location information from users' GPS phones and sharing them without notifying users or asking for permission. The researchers looked at 30 popular Android apps, including the Weather Channel, MySpace, Evernote, a bunch of others. They used a homemade tool called TaintDroid to track what data were being shared and with whom. This is what they found. 2/3 of these apps violated user privacy by sharing location data or information that could identify individual handsets. Half of them sent user location information to advertising networks like AdMob or analytics companies like Flurry without user consent. 7 of the apps sent the unique device identification numbers of the GSM user and the handset SIM card to its servers. 2 of the apps captured the user's cell phone number along with the ID number and the user's geographical coordinates. Mind you, if the police wanted this information, they'd need a court order. These apps are doling it out like candy to advertising firms and storing it on their own servers. This finding does demonstrate that Android's coarse-grained access control provides insufficient protection against third-party applications seeking to collect sensitive data. On the other hand, it's a really, really good thing for folks like the folks at Lookout at mylookout.com. They have... they're essentially an antivirus for the Droid phone, and they are the folks who would capture this sort of thing.
And it probably says in the user agreements no one reads that it's going to do this.
Well, yeah. Yes
down,
and no.
The fine print.
Yeah, that's how they're skirting the law.
Yes and no. It does say, you know, it may use your location information. But a lot of things use your location information, and the real question is, what are they going to do with that data? They don't tell you what they're going to do with those data. If you want to know the list of apps, probably the best place to find the entire list is at droidlust.com. That's droidlust.com. Steve's going to put it on the thing. Right now it's running ridiculously slowly, and I do not know why. I mean,
well,
it's just,
it could,
it took for freaking ever to come up.
Well, the poker guys were saying, no, the internet seemed to be very slow. Ray and them were trying to pull up different websites in that during their show, and he said the internet here seems to be awful.
Well, I don't know if it's, I don't know if it's Droid Lust itself, but or it's
just
or
the
it's
internet,
the thing. But
I'm having no problems on other sites.
Right, Droid Lust for some reason very slow. Maybe it's just being hit hard. But the very first article from actually posted today is Your Phone Knows Your Secrets. And it's about your Android phone spying on you. And it does have the entire list of the 30 applications. Now, the bad part is these 30 applications don't actually tell you, or rather the report doesn't say which ones were bad and which weren't. Apparently, until they've made contact with
there's
the
no
manufacturers.
Rating?
Well, it's
no,
how you define bad.
Well, yeah. Doing this stuff is what I'm saying. Only 22 of them or 23 of them, two-thirds of the apps, right? So a third of the apps didn't violate user privacy, but they don't say which ones those were.
That's
and I guess I understand that. Well, but I guess I understand that until they've talked with their lawyers and whatever. I get that. But all the apps are listed on the... on the website. Now, the only two that I had Barcode and Bump, the barcode scanner and Bump.
Oh, I love that barcode one.
Yeah.
I've got Bump on my iPod. I wonder if it would talk to the Android version.
It does.
Nice.
I know it does, but I uninstalled it.
But the barcode, though, is cool that better. You don't have to have all those stupid key fobs.
Right.
That you can sit there and get rid of all those. And
oh, no, this is a different thing. This is, well, it might do the same thing.
I've got one on my iTouch.
Yeah, it's a different product.
Which, now I got to turn around, and for you folks that don't know, that's another story itself, getting a new eye touch.
Basically, what happened here was this barcode scanner lets you scan barcodes.
Oh, okay.
And so it works the other way around, actually. So, yeah, that's a different...
I think the one I had was called Key Fob.
Yeah, I know that one. Yep. If you are going to... have an Android phone, you really ought to be running out Lookout. It's free, www.mylookout.com, and it's essentially an antivirus program for your phone, and it protects it from all that stuff. So that's pretty cool. So yeah, my suggestion is if you get the opportunity, check out the droidlust.com. It's the latest post on that site, and check it out, and that'll tell you what all. There's 30 of them. I'm not going to read them out on the phone. But there it is. So our question to you, do you use any of these apps? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, or toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
Hey, you see it on TV shows all the time. You know, the cops will turn on the GPS in your phone, or they'll be able to track where you were, what time you were here, what time you were there. And we think of that as a TV show, but that's all true. They can do that.
Yeah, but theoretically, they can't do it without a warrant. These guys are just doing it and selling it to advertisers, which is an entirely different thing.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I don't know what the fallout of that's going to be. We'll find out.
What I was mentioning earlier, there's a new TV show this season with Jim Belushi and Jerry O'Connell called The Defenders, about two Vegas lawyers. And the case this week was a woman had a car accident, hit a jogger. She got off her phone at 8:13 p.m., called 911 at 8:14 p.m. after the accident. And so, of course, they're charging her with manslaughter because she was talking on the phone.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So what was neat is they found the jogging program that the jogger had in her phone and showed that the route she went meant that she was jumped out in front of the car and got hit, wasn't hit from behind as she was jogging. So
that's why they're lawyers. But the theory actually is, of course, I'm not a lawyer, but the theory seems to be that if you actually hit somebody, it doesn't matter whether they jumped out at you or not. You hit
them.
Well,
it's the difference between an accident and manslaughter.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay.
Well, one of the other things, though, and folks have to be aware of, that's where more and more insurance companies, first question they ask during an accident, were there any cell phones there? And they want to check the cell phone records. Because if you, at that time of the accident, you were even a few minutes one way or the other on your cell phone, and it still pisses me off. Because I spend most of my day out on the road.
Right.
And sit there and still see folks now with their hands through the steering wheel trying to steer and texting.
Yeah, right. They're so important, they can't be out of touch for 30 seconds. You egotistical, self-centered, no good, and dangerous jerk.
And they're not, in and the left-hand lane.
And it's not just the kids anymore. See, it used to be people reading. I've seen people reading the newspaper in the fast lane.
Reading the newspaper, doing the makeup.
I've seen makeup, doing the hair, guys
texting,
shaving.
Yeah. I've seen guys shaving.
Yeah, with an electric razor, sitting there, going through it. It's like, and he's looking up at the mirror over, the center mirror. It's like, you're not even watching where the heck you're going.
Attentive driving. In fact, they brought that out in the TV show. They brought a driving instructor on, and because the transcript of the cell phone call said that she looked up and the jogger was just there. So her eyes weren't on the road, so she's guilty, right?
Yeah.
Well, the driving instructor said, well, no, you're supposed to look down at your instruments. You're supposed to look at your mirrors. So
yeah, just glance. You don't actually look. You just glance.
Yeah. Right.
And of course, there's cases of where somebody said, well, I wasn't on my phone. I handed it to my friend. She was texting on my phone or whatever.
Yeah.
But you know what?
I had a girlfriend
that wrecked
one of my cars because she was fiddling with the radio.
It's how Ernie Kovacs died.
Yeah, so they
Ernie Kovacs had borrowed his wife's car, and it wasn't the radio. He was he was trying to find the cigar lighter, the lighter in the car.
Oh, cigarette lighter.
And
do they even put those in
cigar cars
anymore?
Mine doesn't have.
They're
one.
12-volt accessory outlets now.
Right, but it doesn't have
a cigarette lighter in it.
Yeah. Right, right, right.
Yep.
Today is, by the way, speaking of Ernie Kovacs, today is Groucho Marx's birthday, and Bud Abbott of Abbott and Costello. It's both their birthdays today. Groucho Marx, nobody better. Bud Abbott, second greatest straight man in the movies. The best straight man ever. Margaret Dumont. She was the foil in most of the Marx Brothers films.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
She was pitch perfect. Absolutely perfect. But at any rate, to get back to something having to do with something that we care about, do check out mylookout.com if you've got an Android phone. I demand you download Lookout Mobile Security. It's free. You know me, I'm all about the free. So it's available for Android and BlackBerry and Windows Mobile. So if you have any of those three phones, you can get Lookout for it. They can't put it on the iPhone because they aren't allowed to dig deep enough into the operating system to do that. So, but for the other three, they've tried. They've done their best to get an exception from Apple, but they can't. So for the other three, Android, BlackBerry, and Windows Mobile, you can download Lookout at mylookout.com.
Yeah, it's one of the security features Apple is trying to enforce on the iPhone is that all applications are sandboxed except for specific access to, say, your contacts. So a dialing program can look at your contacts.
Well, these guys would like to be able to...
Yeah, sandbox? What the...
Yeah, it means in a sandbox. You can't get outside the sandbox. It's the same thing over in Second Life. When you build, you're in the sandbox.
Mm-hmm.
If you step out the sandbox, you can't build. Mm-hmm. Same idea. It's okay. A sandbox. You can't. If you're going gotcha. To do something, you'd only do it there.
Okay.
You can't go anywhere. So when you sandbox an application, it means it's in its own little box and you can't get out and
never
and
heard
do
of that.
And
yeah,
it's supposed to be a protection against data leakage and bad programs looking at other data. We're seeing it more and more in web browsers now. I think IE9 has it. Firefox 4 has it. I think even Safari 5 is doing it now too. Each web page is trying to sandbox itself so that cross-site scripting errors can't attack one web page versus another web page. Your plugins, your Flash, especially Flash because it crashes so much, runs in a sandbox so that if Flash crashes, it doesn't take out your whole browser page. It just takes out that one little animation and you try to relaunch it.
Yeah. But, yeah, it really is... It really is, I think, a great thing that I can put an antivirus program on my phone and look out. It's terrific.
But isn't it sad that we
said you have to?
Yeah.
Well, yes and no. I mean, if you're going to use any application from anybody, and Apple's had that problem. They've had people doing things that really they shouldn't be doing inside their applications. So if they were to allow some sort of antivirus program that could be updated, like My Lookout or, whatever, like Lookout, but they don't. So... you're kind of wide open on that phone.
That's where my phone still... Oh, thanks!
Maybe.
I only do texting and I only do phone calls.
Well, you've got the Symbian operating system on yours, and it still runs apps. So it is possible that somebody could write something that would attack you. So you got to be aware that if you've got a smartphone, check out Lookout at mylookout.com. And what's really cool about it is you not only get the security of stopping viruses and hackers, protecting yourself from mobile viruses and all that stuff, but it does two other things that are super cool. One is it'll back up and restore your data, which is pretty nice for those of us who don't have, I have that in 100 other applications, but if you don't have it, that's nice. And it really also has the nice feature of being able to find your phone if it's missing. You can go on the website and... find it on a map. So it's that same sort of GPS location, only it's the only phone you can find is your own. So you can also make your phone scream. Let's say you've lost it in the house. You can make it scream. And it is loud. It is
Could you imagine if somebody stole it?
It is. Well, and you can do that. You can also, and here's the best part, you can wipe it out. You send it the right command from this program, and you set that up ahead of time, what the secret passwords are and all that stuff. So that's one you would really want to make very long. And you can then wipe out your phone. So if you really did lose it somewhere and somebody has your phone, you can wipe it out and they get no info. You've still lost the phone, but they don't have any of your private
information. I think they would be hysterical that, somebody thinks they're smug and they, steal the phone.
Found a phone.
Yeah, and they're at some other location and... All of a sudden, this phone starts screaming bloody murder. Yep.
Well, you set it to scream.
And it won't shut up.
You wipe it out. It won't shut up. And you can call the police and say, yes, someone stole my phone, and they're at X location.
Yeah. Oh, that would be sweet.
Yeah, that's what I like about my Lookout. That's what I like about Lookout. Been very, very pleased with that.
I have to say the internet is working pretty fast. I just downloaded a 3 gigabyte file.
No, I said before, I think it's the server that Droid Lust is on.
Other important events this week, October 4th, 1957, Sputnik was launched.
Yep.
October 6th, 1866, the first train robbery.
Except this is October 2nd.
Right, so it's coming this week.
Yeah.
Rock Hudson died today in 85.
Stephen J. Cannell died yesterday.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Yeah, he had a carcinoma, and it finally got him. He's passed. That's kind of sad. I don't know who's going to be the extra chair in the poker games that Castle has now, but it's a whole other story. Never mind. That's TV geek stuff. That's all he does.
Actually, Donald Belisario's son seemed to be coming up in production now because I keep seeing this David Belisario on shows.
Yeah.
So what, Belisario and Cannell pretty much created every TV show in the 80s?
Pretty much. If it wasn't one, it was the other.
Yep.
Because I don't, other than a few of the new programs, don't watch a heck of a lot of TV.
No, I don't either, but I used to watch a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Like I said, in the 60s and the 70s, even into the 80s, at the end of every show, it was a Belisario or a Cannell production, and you knew that immediately.
Yeah.
And so if you, you know, any of the adventure shows. All right, look, we're going to take another break. And when we come back, maybe we'll even talk about some computery stuff. But in the meantime, we want you to listen very, very carefully to these underwriters because they're wonderful human beings and a credit to the whole dang place. Back in just a couple of minutes, Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour. We're Sound Bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Got a computer question? Call the boys now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll-free 800-790-0415. Online at soundbites.org. Soundbites continues next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Hey, Microsoft filed patent infringement complaints against Motorola and its Android phones in the International Trade Commission in U.S. Federal Court Friday, indicating that the software giant has lost all hope of ever being important in the phone business and is trying to bludgeon their way in with patent. I'm sorry, indicating the software giant may hope to use its strong patent position as one way to set its mobile software apart from the competition. That's what I meant to say. Microsoft said that Motorola's Android phones infringe 9 patents, including some that would appear to threaten most smartphone platforms. Android is the open source OS built by Microsoft rival Google. According to a blog post written by Horacio Gutierrez, general counsel at Microsoft, the patents appear to include some related to Microsoft Exchange Active Sync, which syncs email, calendar, and contacts between a mobile phone and a software-based computer program. Other patents involve technology that displays signal strength and battery power on phones. So if your phone displays the signal strength and the battery power, you probably owe Microsoft some money. The suit shouldn't come as a surprise. Earlier this year, HTC announced it had licensed Microsoft patents relevance to its Android phones. Companies did not disclose what kinds of technologies the patents covered at this time. At the time, Microsoft said it was in discussions with other phone makers using Android. The first phones using Microsoft's revamped mobile phone software are scheduled to appear October 11th. The company said that one benefit of using its Windows 7 phone software compared to some of the free OSs like Android or Symbian is that it has a broad patent portfolio and can its own patents and can protect handset makers from threats from itself.
Microsoft indemnifies its Windows 7 Phone 7 licensees against patent infringement claims, the company said. We stand behind our product and step up to our responsibility to clear the necessary IP rights
from themselves. So our question to you is, Microsoft justified or are they just another patent bully? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299, or toll free, 1-800-790-0415. You know, Microsoft has recently become irrelevant, according to a couple of people who follow the news. They've looked at the number of news items on various things, number of times a company was mentioned in the news, and Android was first, Apple was right behind them, and Microsoft was a very, very, very distant third. Nobody writes about Microsoft anymore. Nobody cares about Microsoft.
Well, they haven't done anything newsworthy.
Exactly.
What, so they now, just keep reinventing the same old stuff.
Right. They just keep putting a new face on the same old, same old. Here's the problem, though. You know a company is in trouble when they start relying on their patents to become relevant again rather than actually being innovative and doing something interesting. I have a friend who is a very, very high up person in Microsoft, and we were having a discussion about this. And I was saying, you know what? Microsoft has predicated their entire phone life on the belief that people want a start button on their phones. And we don't need that. Yeah, we would like to be able to do exchange and mail and calendaring and tasks. And we would like to be able to look at or manipulate documents and, you know, word processing documents and spreadsheets and presentations. But I don't need to own a Microsoft phone to do those things. I can do them with both Microsoft documents and Google documents on my Android phone if I want to. And I don't have to, and so far at least, and we'll see with the Windows Phone 7 operating system. But up until now, the Microsoft phone operating system has been horribly slow. I mean, horribly slow. And,
See, I want to know why they just sued Motorola and not the other cell phone manufacturers.
Because they're going to go after the big dog first.
Yeah, see what they can grab there.
They got HTC to license something.
Right. Now they're going after Motorola, and if they get the opportunity to win...
Then the others will fall in
Samsung
place.
Samsung and Nokia and the other vendors.
It's like dominoes. You first hit that first one. If that falls, then he's going to go after the rest.
Then you have a precedent.
And again, it's still nothing new that they have come up, that Microsoft has come out and said, oh, I got it, absolutely have it. People are standing in line at midnight wanting to get something. It's just not there. And it hasn't been there for
a long
years.
Time. Well, that's sort of been the whole company history is they see what the – and that's one way to market products. You see what's selling well and then try to make something better. But Microsoft usually fails at the first three or four attempts before it catches on.
Right, and people aren't going to wait anymore. Now, you talk about people standing in line. They stood in line for iPhones.
Yep.
They stood in line for Android phones. Yep. They're not standing in line for anything from Microsoft anymore. Microsoft has been complacent. They've owned 98% of the market, and I think they're down to 96 now, which still is hundreds of millions of desktops they don't own anymore, right? But they've been complacent. If you owned one Microsoft operating system, you were likely to upgrade to another. That's entirely not true in the phone market. People are not, there's no phone loyalty as such.
None at all.
There is for Apple people because they have Apple loyalty, which is different from phone loyalty.
But that's still with the stuff that's being available. Now, see, that's where the Droid and the iPhone.
Right.
Now there's some serious competition. This one's trying to one-up the other.
Right, but when was the last time you heard of a major computing platform competition that didn't have the word Microsoft in it?
No.
And nobody thinks about Microsoft. When you think about phones, you can name, you'll name Apple, you'll name Google, you'll name Symbian, you'll name RIM, and maybe then you'll think to name Microsoft. But that's the deal, and that's the problem Microsoft has.
It just hasn't caught on.
That's exactly right. The kin was a joke. They canceled it before the ads hit the air. The simple fact is Microsoft has made themselves irrelevant in the phone market by not innovating. They've allowed Apple and Google to take the innovation baton away from them and run with it. And I'm not saying that makes Apple, that makes Microsoft a bad company or a horrible company. And they're still certainly relevant in all the other spaces. But in the phone space, nobody thinks of them. And that's direct. It's like with the internet. They were late to the party. They didn't get it.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't get it. Yeah. And they were late to the party. But because they were on every desktop on earth, when they finally brought out Internet Explorer and just put it on your computer, you used it, and they became number one.
And that's,
but with
that's
the phones,
how, by default.
Yeah,
right.
And then
there's no default for the phones.
Yep.
And then them insisting that you it's part of the operating system,
right,
and you
right.
had to use it.
Right.
And it's in the U.S. at least, it's especially complicated by the phone contracts that virtually every carrier uses.
Right.
You got a 2-year contract you're locked into, and so you can't change your phone even if you wanted to.
Right.
Or you got to pay a fortune to do it.
Right. And that, of course, is why they went after Motorola, not Google. Well, first, Google will fight them and probably win. But also, Motorola is the one with the phone. It's not a Google phone.
Right.
It's a Motorola phone that happens to run the Android operating system. So some of the things they're going after, which is the signal strength and the battery thing, they're not really Google things. Google provides hooks, but they're actually phone things.
Right.
And so that's where that comes from. And I'll tell you what, I really, really like the Android operating system on my phone. I really do like it. I'm looking forward to the tablets that have it.
One of the problems with the Android phones is the market fragmentation that the companies that are making Android phones are putting different versions of Android on each one,
right?
Different UIs on top of Android, and so it's as for the average consumer, you may not notice or even know that it's an Android phone. It's just the hot phone,
right?
And next month there'll be another hot phone.
Well, and that's why there's no loyalty. I have, God bless the folks at Verizon. They were kind enough to loan me a Samsung Fascinate.
They're going
to
give us all one?
No, they're loaning this to me. I have to give it back this coming
week. When they're giving us all phones?
This is not what's happening here now. We're talking about the fact that I have this Galaxy phone.
Yeah, but when are we getting ours?
Okay, sorry.
I want mine!
Okay, good for you.
I know.
Here's the deal with this. It's a really nice phone. I love the Super AMOLED screen. It's a really fast processor. It's got lots of cool things in it. But instead of the Google search, it has Bing search. Now, I suppose that's not as big a deal one way or the other, Google Bing. For searching, maybe. But the problem is it's got Bing Maps and not Google Maps.
Ouch.
And there's no turn-by-turn instructions. So I thought today, you know, I would test that feature and see if it could get me.
Oh, that's
here.
Why you were late here? Getting here?
Yeah. And
where'd you put you? Over in Brooklyn?
And it wouldn't talk to me. It doesn't do turn by turn. I would have to look while I'm, and we go, let's go back to this. While I'm driving, I would have to look down at the phone and flip to the next set of instructions, read them, the next turn or whatever, read them, go back up and look at the road and then drive. Now, excuse me, but that's not right.
I'd say, let me know what route you're taking, because I'm going to take a different one.
Oh, yeah. So I'm not. That feature alone truly, truly does not impress me. The rest of the phone I like. It's a little quiet in terms of, you know, I'm old, but it's a little quiet. But it's got a decent-sized screen, which I kind of like.
That seems to be the big thing. We're getting into the 4-inch screens, 4.3, 4.5-inch screens, and now they're almost too big to fit in a pocket.
Right. Well, I'm waiting for I did also borrow one of our faculty members was over in China and bought himself the iPad from Eken, E-K-E-N. And you turn it over, it's got an Apple logo on the back. It was a 7-inch pad, and while it was an anemic processor and an old version of the Android operating system, I could see the utility. A 7-inch pad, for me, the 10-inch, the 8, the 9.7-inch or whatever the heck it is, iPad size is too big. It's big and it's heavy. This thing was much lighter, and at 7 inches, it was smaller enough. I could fit it in a coat pocket if I wanted to. You could throw it in a purse or a bag, a laptop bag, whatever. And it actually is a good size. The screen is big enough to play with, to really see things, even for these old eyes. And so I really liked it. In terms of that.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, the machine itself was terrible. It was terrible. But the promise of that screen size was really, really nice.
Hampered by an incredibly slow processor and Android version 1.5, a really old version of Android. In fact, one of the reviews I read, the technical specs say it has a 600 megahertz processor.
Yeah, it's more like 500.
Well, one of the reviews I read said that they add the CPU and GPU to make 600.
Ah, nice.
So your CPU is 4 and your GPU is 2, so there's that's 600. Yeah.
Right. Now, on the other hand, it cost the guy, you know, over in China, it cost him like $40. Yep. So it's not like he lost any money on the deal.
Yeah.
Right? So that's all right. The other part of the problem, of course,
factory direct from China.
There you go.
At Amazon.
By slow boat?
It's $180 here.
And it ships from Missouri. The company is factory direct from China.
The other thing I didn't like about it, now this may be because he bought it in China, but it had a combination, the market, the Android market, was in a weird combination of English and one of the China, I don't know if it was Mandarin or Cantonese or what it was, but one of the Chinese languages. And I, okay. I couldn't read it, so it was pretty weird. It was pretty weird. But the concept of that size is the one I'm really looking forward to, because it gives you enough space to really see stuff, but it's small and light enough to tuck away when you need to tuck it away.
Isn't the Dell Streak, wasn't that 7 inches?
That was five.
Five?
They're coming out with a 7.
The
but
new the BlackBerry tablet?
That's going to be seven as well. Seven, I think, is the sweet spot.
Yep. Like you say, it's not too big.
You sit down with an iPad, and it really takes you over. You know, and I get it. That's what Apple wants.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want you doing anything else.
Exactly.
You put two hands on the iPad and stare at it. I get that. But when you want to use it peripherally to doing other things, that 7-inch form factor is much better.
All right. One other thing that we should get into, and before we go into the top of the hour, is to remind folks, you're coming up on a great time of year. And what do I mean by that?
Our favorite time of year.
Yep. Where you folks, as the listeners, show how much you appreciate us coming to you each week, giving you week after week free computer advice. And it's only two times a year. And there is an early incentive right now that if you pledge at the $35 level or higher, they've got some great bonus gifts that you can get in on. And if you want to wait until the drive starts on the 16th, that's fine too. But the key thing is, folks, is we're going to be coming to you because we are, as you hear us constantly, day and night say, member supported. We are one of 8 jazz stations left in the nation. And Rom here has put together one heck of a package.
Well, member supported jazz stations.
Yes, correct. And but he's put together, you know, a good variety of programming. And that's all, again, driven by you folks. You're showing your support by, you know, each time we come to you twice a year and anteing up and, you know, getting us to make the goal. And this time, I'd really like to beat the polka dots ahead of time. As you know, we've only been here just a little over a year, and we haven't been doing too shabby.
No.
But, you know, they still get to rub it in each time. And, you know, it's just one of those things that we got to get out there and show our support, you know, and help us out.
All right, we are going to take a slightly longer break now. It is coming up at the top of the hour, and that means we will be taking that slightly longer break where we can replenish our electrolytes and give you the chance to sit back and relax for a moment. But we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and with each and every one of you. You continue to listen to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites, and as Dave has so politely pointed out, we are right here on member-supported, and that's you folks. And we thank you all for your continued, those of you who have supported us, we thank you for your continued support, and we'll be coming to you for that member support again very soon. We're right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. It's 1 o'clock, and we'll see you in just a couple of minutes.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Sound Bites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. In its continuing attempts to make the web faster, Google is trimming down the size of image files, which currently make up about 65% of the bytes on the web. 65% of it is images. Google announced late Thursday afternoon that it's releasing a developer preview of a new image format, which it's dubbed WebP. An alternative to the JPEG format, which is typically used for web pictures and images, WebP should significantly reduce the byte size of images, Google promises. And that reduction is expected to enable websites to load a whole lot faster. Images and photos can significantly slow down a user's web experience, especially on bandwidth-constrained networks such as a mobile network. said Richard Rabat, a Google product manager. He actually wrote that in a blog post. In order to gauge the effectiveness of our efforts, we randomly picked about 1 million images from the web, mostly JPEG, some PNGs and GIFs, and re-encoded them to WebP without perceptibly compromising visual quality. This resulted in an average 39% reduction in file size, he wrote. We expect the developers will achieve in practice even better file size reduction with WebP when starting from an uncompressed image. Dan Olds, an analyst with the Gabriel Consulting Group, noted that this level of file size shrink could greatly speed up transferring of images. The issue will be making WebP a standard in the JPEG world. If it were to become a standard, it could spur performance gains on a wide range of applications, not just internet content. However, this isn't anywhere close to a slam dunk, Olds said. First, the new format would have to be able to offer the same range of quality as JPEGs, and the JPEG standard is universal. It's going to take a huge effort to replace it with another format, no matter how much better it might be. Olds was quick to add that this might not only affect web speed, this could also affect storage. With lots of images, while lots of images are tiny files, it adds up fast, he noted. The average web session probably includes hundreds, if not thousands, of individual images. So smaller image files will pay dividends in terms of storage, speed, and image loading, and even quicker email if you're sending images as attachments, which so many people do. Or their background is some cutesy little graphic.
Yeah.
And that could mean a lot of disk space savings for online enterprises, for enterprises in general. So our question to you, does the idea of a new image format that saves you disk space excite you? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, toll-free at 1-800-790-0415.
The thing that was interesting about that is they said they found 1 million images and recompressed them. Does that mean they found uncompressed images and recompressed them, or they found JPEGs and recompressed them?
No, they did it with JPEGs and stuff, and they still reduced them to another 39%.
Well, you could JPEG a JPEG and reduce it.
Not 39%.
If you keep going.
Not with imperceptible quality loss.
Right.
You know, we've been doing, so much talk about the phones and all that. Have we done a survey on how many folks have actually gotten rid of their home phone and just relied on cells?
That's a very good question. It's a very good question.
You know, I mean, I myself, one of the first things I did a while back was get rid of my home phone.
Yep. A lot of people are doing it.
Why bother? I mean,
most of the students that I know at RIT don't have a home phone and will never have a home phone. They don't need one.
Yeah, a cell. I mean, and I'm just wondering.
Well, technically, they don't have a home.
Well, but they don't. Yeah. You know, a lot of them have a dorm and they don't bother to get a phone.
Well, I do, and like I say, I've got a business line.
Yeah, you got your business on
I got
cell
the business phone,
yeah.
And if folks want to get hold of me otherwise, it's the cell phone.
I know. I have a
friend.
I
don't want to talk to anyone anyway.
Well, and I have a friend who realized that he could get an additional cell phone at $10 a month,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yep.
And replace his home phone with that.
Which is $25 a month.
Which is $25
minimum,
a month, saving $15 a month immediately, right? And so now he's got his home phone is just another cell phone. And so if somebody calls the house, they get that cell phone, which also means he now no longer has the problem of he picks up the phone, he walks out in the backyard, sits down, whatever. He's always got, you know, that phone is still going to be connected, and it's still going to get there. So, yeah,
well,
no,
I still don't
people
miss
are beginning to do that.
Those other legitimate, you know, folks that can call and bug you in the middle of dinner or anything else that can legally, you know, still harass you with, you know, advertising and all this other bull.
Yep. Yeah, now that, yeah. And that's an interesting set of problems and for the phone companies of the world. How do they deal with that?
Well, the local phone company here in Rochester has been pushing their digital phone service. So both the phone company and the cable company are moving to telephone over the internet. In fact, was it AT&T a couple of months ago was petitioning the FCC that we want to stop servicing and setting up landlines because the infrastructure is so old. Yeah, a lot of the telephone lines across the country are more than 100 years old.
Yeah,
they want to get out of the copper business and stop supporting it, and everyone will be wireless.
Right. And that's doable. Frontier got out of the wireless business years ago. Now I guess they're trying to get back in. I don't know.
Well, they're in the wired voice over IP business.
Right. All right, our next caller is George from Greece, New York. Welcome, George. What's your question?
Dallas, I have a question for you. I get a Windows message, and I think I wrote this down quickly but correctly. Virtual memory minimum too low. What's it trying to tell me?
Your virtual memory minimum is too low.
And
I got that part of it.
But have you danced the tango?
No, in this case, here's the problem. When you have a system, you have two types of memory. There's the real memory that's the actual RAM in your machine.
Okay.
And because Windows allows you to load so many programs, you can overload the amount of programs you have compared to the amount of memory you have. And it puts them in virtual memory, which is space on your hard drive. That's called the swap space.
Okay.
You may have heard that term.
I think I have.
What it's saying is you don't have enough swap space set aside.
But what I'm seeing also in my world is literally there's two Trojans and a spyware program out there mm-hmm. that keep generating stuff and causing that message.
No, I'm not saying that, but I wanted him to understand what virtual memory was before we got to a solution for it, right?
Yeah.
Right. So, yeah, one of the things you definitely want to do is dance a security tango. That's at securitytango.com.
Yes, sir.
Click on the Let's Dance button.
What was that again?
That's securitytango.com.
And click on the Let's Dance button, print out, pick your operating system, print out that page. While you're in there, click on a few links for me, will you? I don't think I'm allowed to say that, actually. I'm not sure that I'm allowed to say that. I have to go back and read the Google.
He just went out of the air. I didn't dump it.
Yeah, I know. But then follow that and clean up your machine. And if it then persists, then you have to change the amount of swap space you've got or add real memory to your machine. How much memory do you have in your machine? Well, first, what version of Windows are you using?
XP.
Yeah, I knew that. How much memory do you have?
I think it's 512.
Yeah.
How much free disk space do you have?
I don't know the answer to that right now, but that probably is the one that might need some attention.
Yeah, a combination of
you need both
too little physical memory and too little disk space left will give you that error too.
Exactly.
Okay.
So the first thing you want to do is clean up your hard drive, get rid of some stuff,
or mm-hmm. get a bigger hard drive.
Or get a bigger hard drive, which is doable. You can bring it to any of the reputable dealers in town, two of whom are sitting here. And they can take your old drive and clone it over to the new, bigger drive. And then you're on your way with a much bigger drive and add memory to your machine, which would not be a bad deal. You could go up to 2 megs. You could actually go up to 3.
Yep.
Gigs.
Gigs. Thank you. I have Enright disease.
Hey, I resemble that.
and
I haven't done that in a long time.
No, you haven't. You can go up to 3 gig and for XP without any worries, assuming your motherboard will support it. And that would solve most of that problem. For your immediate solution, however, go into the TEMP, find your TEMP directory mm-hmm. and your TMP directory, because various programs on XP used either at their whim, and dump as many files out of there as Windows will allow you to.
The disk cleanup command in your properties will do a lot of that too. Empty the recycle bin, clean up.
AFT will also. There's another utility called AFT.
AFT?
Yep, and that'll clean up. Yep, that'll create your little utility to clean up cookies and the whole nine yards.
Okay.
Yeah. Go ahead.
And before I leave you, I want to say I think it was last week that I heard Nick do a little singing, and you have a great voice.
Thank you so very much. I appreciate hearing that. I used to sing for a living.
I can believe that. It had great pitch, and it just showed a professional training there.
Thank you so very much. Thank you. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Okay, fellas. Thank you.
I'd go back to that profession in a hot New York minute if it earned me money. My daughter's taking that up now. She's gonna be the actress in the family. All right, our next caller is Zach, who's calling from Rochester, New York. Hi, Zach, what's up?
I had a kind of security question. I went to Steve Gibson's website, and it offers you this free service of scanning your ports to make sure things are secure.
Yep.
And it's telling me that I have a closed port 00. It's closed but detectable, and I didn't know if that's something I should worry about.
Not really. If it can't detect the ports at all, that's best.
Okay.
If it can detect them but it's a closed port, that's good too. If it's open, that's probably bad. But closed is good. Undetectable is better. Very few people have entirely undetectable ports.
Okay.
So closed is okay. As long as it's closed, you're good.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Yep. Thank you.
And basically what that means is that information on your computer can be shared with other computers. You may be familiar with file sharing or printer sharing, where you can share files with other computers. If you've set it up wrong, or if you're running earlier versions of Windows where it was set up wrong by default, all of your file sharing is done over the internet as well as your local network. So anyone on the internet can see your files. So this test called Shields Up from GRC will test the ports on your computer or on your router if you have one to make sure that these ports are not open. So if your file sharing port was open, that means anyone on the internet can access your files. And so that would be a bad thing.
And you have 65,525, is it, ports? 36. Suddenly I can't remember. 65,000 plus ports on your machine. So you let the computer do it. But each and every one of those ports can be opened by a program. So it's good. And some are standardized. Port 80, for example, is where you do your web browsing. So each of them is standardized. And there are a bunch of free ones, but they're there. And if you use a product like Steve Gibson's port scanner, that's at grc.com. Steve's putting up a link now.
We first talked about that in 2001.
Yep.
And it's been around forever.
That Shields Up, I think, is the one. What that's called. That'll test all your ports and tell you if they're open or closed or whatever. And as we said, undetectable is best. Closed is good. Open is probably bad, although you will have some open ones.
Yeah, if you know you have a web server on your computer and you're sharing web pages to the internet, your port 80 will be open. Or if you know you're doing file service, you know, your port 21 could be open. So if you know it's supposed to be open and it is, that's probably okay. But if you didn't plan on sharing information with the rest of the internet, having open ports is bad.
Right. And, you know, you will have ports that open because you're doing email, right? So those kind of things, you need to know where they are. You need a little more information than just, although I think Gibson gives you all of that, if you know.
Yeah, he tells you what each port does.
Yeah. So for 21, for example, for mail. So that's important to know. All right, our next caller is Doug from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Doug. What's your question?
Oh, this is a beauty, but I got to tell you first, you guys are going to get a pizza next week if you solve this problem. I will deliver it myself.
Excellent.
About a year ago, I bought an external Seagate hard drive, which goes into my USB port on my desktop machine. And shortly thereafter, I had to connect my laptop to the desktop, and those two machines had been, there had been some resources set up so I could share, you know, the hard disk on the. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Anyway, this I probably sound knowledgeable, but I did this by cracking open a book and going step by step without really knowing what I was doing, but it worked. Anyway, I had to also set up the external Seagate thing so that the laptop could see it through the network, and that worked fine. Then I took the Seagate to my girlfriend's house because she never backs up her stuff, so we backed up her stuff onto my Seagate thing and bring it back to my machine or her new machine, and any machine other than mine or basically her old one looks at the directory and says, can't access, it was created in a different machine. Even though when I connected the Seagate to her old machine for the backup, there was no networking done, no resources set up. It just lit up as an external device.
Yeah.
So basically, you know, what I want to know is, since I never really need to use this as a network resource again, the Seagate, how do I make it lose its mind so it thinks it's right out of the box? and so I can plug it in any machine. I don't care about the security. I just want to get the files. You know what I mean?
Well, there's two ways to make it lose its mind. One is to just sit it down with Steve for a couple hours and let him talk. That'll do it.
Oh! From Crash.
I'm sorry. I just had to say it. The real problem here, thank you very much.
The real problem here, well, I've been picking on Dave already, so now it's time to pick on Steve.
This is a feature of Windows and Macintosh, is that files created by somebody else are not your files, and you cannot see them. So this is a feature that it's supposed to be doing.
Notice Mac always turn it into a feature.
Yeah.
Right. And actually, in this case, he's right, and it is. But one thing that you can do is become the owner of those files.
Right. Now, I figured that out. It's just a cumbersome extra step.
Right.
Yeah.
How is the drive formatted? Is it FAT or is it NTFS?
NTFS.
That's one of the problems. NTFS enforces security. If you reformat it as FAT, then it doesn't.
Okay, but before...
But you want to get that stuff off of there.
Right, yeah. If you do reformat it, it will lose everything that's on it.
Right.
Right. But in other words, when it first came out of the box, I was able to go from one machine to the next...
well, because it was all under your username.
No, but other people's machines too. In other words, the turning point here was when I networked my laptop and then made this thing a resource by going through whatever procedure it was. And
And that added the security to it.
Okay,
listen, stay on the line. We have to.
That then, basically, other than move the file.
No. Hold on. Stay on the line. We have to take a break, but we'll come back and talk to you after the break. Okay. Stay on the line. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, Doug on the line. Soundbites, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And we have, patiently waiting on the line, Doug from Rochester, New York. All right, Doug, here's your deal. You still there?
Yep, I'm here.
All right, here's the deal. You need now to take ownership of those files.
Mm-hmm.
And can you see the folder they're in?
Yeah, I've done that. I can take ownership. It's just that for some of the files, it's weird. It'll ask me to do it a week later, the same folder. You know, the same thing, take ownership again on the same machine. Isn't that odd?
Now, if you disable file sharing for that shared drive, it should remove all the permission issues, shouldn't it?
No, it still won't.
Yeah, I don't think
it'll remember what was there before.
Yeah.
What about this idea? Well, if I hook up the laptop again to the desktop, network them as I did before, and delete that as a resource.
Well, I would copy all those files out somewhere first.
Yeah,
frankly.
Okay, that leads to the next question then, probably for Dave, who built this machine for me, the desktop. I'm looking at bigger hard drives because now I have more on that external in terms of music than I can fit back onto my hard disk.
Yeah.
And I'm seeing, you know, mixed reviews about big brands, big name brand hard drives. Some people say, oh, my Western Digital failed in 3 months and, you know, my Seagate and this and that. Sounds unbelievable to me, but...
Every company is going to
have
that. Yeah,
they're all going to go through that.
Market pressure has driven prices so low that a lot of companies are sort of cutting corners. And both Western Digital, Seagate, they're big brand names. They'll have several different model lines. Western Digital has the green line, which is low power, and the black line, which is fast.
Yep.
And then the blue line, which is in the middle, so you can, and the same capacity drive will be different prices. And then Seagate has their enterprise class drives, which have a longer warranty and a higher reliability rating, but they cost half again more. So you can choose sort of your reliability versus your price as to
and
what you want.
And if you stick around the 1 terabyte, I mean, they're pretty stable drives right now.
And then the trick is you need a second one for backup.
Mm-hmm. But the other reality is that Google, who uses trillions of drives a year, did a study, of course, on how long drives last, and 5% of them fail out of the box.
Nice.
And after that, it's about 20% per year failure.
Yep, 20% a year. So
they're electronics.
Right. So you could get one that lasts you 20 years. You could get one that lasts you 3 days.
Well, that's what I'm living
Or
with
dead
right
out
now.
Of the box.
In my oldest hard disk, and, you know, knock on wood, nothing's happened, but everything's backed up twice a day.
Right. So. And that's why God made, you know, DVDs to burn things too.
Yeah. All right. Well, I appreciate the input.
Yep. Our
and have a great day.
Thank you.
Man.
You too. Okay.
There's a.
Yeah. Oh,
is there someone else on the line? He's moving.
Yeah. He's well, he can't do
there's,
it that fast.
Yeah. There's a really neat product called the Drobo, which is from a company called Data Robotics, and it's a multi-bay hard drive chassis. And technically, it's a RAID, so you stick two drives into it, and you get the capacity of the drive. They make four bay versions, 5 bay, 8 bay, and more. But the real neat thing about it is you don't have to use the same size the drives that you do in a typical RAID. So you can fill it with 500s because you've got those lying around. After you upgrade to your 1 terabyte drive, what do you do with your old 500s? Well, just throw it in the Drobo. And then when the array fills, you pull out the small drive and put in a bigger drive. So it's virtually unlimited storage. And it is RAID 5 redundant, so if any one drive fails, you lose no data. And it's a really neat way to use up your leftover drives and get some backup space out of it.
You should put a link to that up there, too.
Yeah.
All right, our next caller is Al from Macedon, New York. Welcome, Al. What's your question?
Thank you. Hi, how are you?
Good, and you?
Good. I've got a laptop laying around that we just aren't using because it's too slow, and I'm wondering, with the price drop in the laptops the way they are right now, if it's worth my while, if I can ever do anything with this Acer. It's got 1 gig memory right now, and I was wondering what your approach would be, just buy a new machine, or can I make this work to a reasonable fashion
you can,
for us? Because
you might,
right now it's kind of like too antiquated.
Yeah, you might be able to put more memory in it, but you're not going to be able to change the processor out.
It is what is, or the graphics, or anything else.
Right. So it would be a fine machine to learn Linux on, but in terms of turning it into a fast and sleek Windows machine, not going to happen.
Mm-mm.
Yeah,
it is what it is.
That's why I figured I'd ask you guys.
Use it for simple word processing or for simple email. We get that a lot at our store if people want to buy a cheap used computer, and I just want to get on the internet. And then find out that they want to play Farmville or they want to play heavy Flash animation games, and it just doesn't work on older computers.
Right. If you're one of these people who goes to a coffee shop to write the next Harry Potter series, then that's probably a good choice for you because you just carry it around. It doesn't matter quite how slow it is. But if you're actually going to be using it for, you know, other things, no, it's just not going to work.
Yeah, because we have a good machine, but We need two machines, actually, and
that's the way most families are.
Yeah, so that's I don't want my wife using mine because she messes everything up on mine. So.
We won't tell her that you said that.
She's right here, so she heard me.
Don't brain him until we're off the air.
A lot. You educate the uneducated.
Yeah. some of that problem can be helped by separate usernames. Give each person their own username.
Yeah, I know that, but tell her that. She still likes to go in on my account, okay?
Sure, well, that's,
don't tell her your password.
Yeah, we really don't do domestic disputes. You're kind of on your own for that one.
I've even got the fingerprint thing, and she still gets into my account.
Well, she's smarter than you are then, clearly. That's
There you go.
There you go.
Thank you very much,
tell her to call in with the questions next time, please.
All right, thanks, Al. Good luck.
That was interesting.
Fun, yep. But yeah, we're seeing that more and more, that machines, the speed that computers are getting faster has been slowing down, if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm.
Makes sense.
Yep.
But what we're seeing now is that the internet has been progressing very rapidly and demanding faster and faster machines. The things we want to do on the internet, you know, watching movies or playing video or playing games, you need a fast internet connection and you need a fast processor. So it's very hard for people to realize that their 10-year-old computer is really, really old.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we hear about dog years, you know, 7 dog years for every human year.
1 year.
Yeah, computers close to 10 or 20 years per human year. So your 10-year-old computer is, you know, 100 human years old, and it's difficult for people to upgrade. We see that, and I'm sure Dave does too.
Mm-hmm.
People bring in old computers for repair, and it's going to cost so much to repair, and it's not
like,
going to
no,
run
forget it. It's
new.
Not even worth putting the time or effort in it. Yep. Well, I just wanted to. Yeah, but it's not going to. You're not going to be happy with it. And that's the other
on
big
the one
thing.
Hand, I understand people in these parlous economic
yes,
times.
I thoroughly
get all that. But on the other hand, it's like an old clunker. It's like the winter car.
Yep.
You know, when something goes, you know the next thing is not that far behind. And at some point, it becomes an economic decision. Do I continue to drib and drab money into this thing until I'm broke, or do I just bite the bullet and buy another
car? Well, that's
car?
Like a discussion I got into last night, talking to this person and telling them, you know, yeah, maybe I'm not going to get rich, but, you know, these folks that are coming in and want me to do this repair and that repair, and I sit there and say, no. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not going to have you keep putting good money in after bad, and you're not going to be happy with the performance.
Yeah, my dad.
Just because I want, you know, I could make some bucks, you know, and charge you labor and these different parts, and then you walk away and it's really not what you really wanted, but it is. It's what you said, but it's not what your anticipation as far as speed and improvement is going to be, because I know it's just not going to do it. I won't do it. I'd rather lose the sale.
It's like Al from Macedon. You could beef up the Acer a little bit with more memory.
But you're just moving the bottleneck.
That's right. Yeah. It's not going to do you any real good.
Right. And we've said that for years.
Yep.
You do this, it's going to move the bottleneck somewhere else. Yep. And that's the truth with the older operating systems. So, I mean, it is what it is, and you can't make silk out of a sow's ear.
And it's very frustrating for people trying to get on, you know, modern web pages, and their browser's too old, but they can't update their browser because their OS is too old, mm-hmm. and they can't update their OS because their computer's too old.
And they're getting infected because, again, the OS is so old that they can't do the security updates, and they get frustrated again because they brought it in, and it was just in here, and it's reinfected. Well, yeah, because we can't do anything about it. You've got to update. Well, I can't afford it. I appreciate that, you know, and I'm trying to tell you what you can do with it, but you know, still running Windows 95 or 98.
Can't help you.
It is,
you know,
what it is.
There's the person who's ripe for Linux. Takes a little while to learn, mm-hmm. but from then on, you can move up to the latest, to the latest, to the latest, and it's all free.
Yep.
You know, so somebody like Al could take that, you know, it's time to be a little adventuresome, Al. Take that old Acer, put Linux on it. It'll be faster than Windows was. It won't be fast, but it'll be a little faster.
And it'll run at least. It'll still run faster than Windows.
Right. And it will do still a lot of the things you want to do. You're still not going to do Farmville on it or any of that stuff, but it'll run a little faster. It'll do a bunch of things. All the stuff is free. The word processor, the spreadsheet, the presentation package, everything you want to do on that machine would be free because of Linux. Takes you a little time to learn it, but like I've said before, it's like buying a new car. You still know how to drive. You just don't know where the radio is. And nobody knows where the cigarette lighter is anymore. but you can, it's easy enough to learn. You spend a little time at it. It becomes useful mm-hmm. to you, and save yourself some money and maybe get a little more life out of that old laptop.
And like you say, and gaining a little more knowledge on learning another OS. You know, I mean, it'd be fun.
Yeah, exactly right. Give yourself a little.
It's getting that time of year, you know, with the weather's changing and everything else, and folks are starting to move inside a little bit more. And it's like, oh, man.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Oh, speaking of which, I was going to share my story.
Oh, here we go. All right, kiddies.
No, this is.
Oh, we're not. Okay, we're not.
No, I'm not even going there because, you know, it's one of these things I was always told. Because I sit there, and I got the bad habit, and I'll admit it. Sit there and put pieces of paper in my pockets, you know, and it's like, yeah, because I got to remember to save it. And it would go through the wash, and it would be all crumpled and couldn't read it anymore. Well, this past Sunday, I happened to be over at the German Fest with the Kiwanis Club. And that was the second weekend I was there listening to the fantastic music. But I brought my iTouch so I could listen to my type of music. Because hearing the chicken dance for the fourth time,
yeah, right.
Within 2 hours. No, that was ready to. I was ready to.
So, this is why you hate the polka dots.
I was ready to strangle the chicken,
see,
okay? But meanwhile, I'm listening to my iTouch, and it was great. The whole afternoon passed real well, and, you know, once I was done, I packed it up, put it back in my pocket, went home. Later that night, you know, throw the stuff in the wash, get ready. I figure out, just get up in the morning, I'll start that load of wash right away. Well, I did, and I come on downstairs, go to get my coffee, and I figure, oh, wait a minute, I better grab the iTouch and hook it up because I had it running a long time, and I noticed the battery was low. I'm looking around.
Yeah.
Didn't see it on my desk.
Yeah.
Went to my coat.
Yeah.
Wasn't in the coat. And it's one of those, oh, ship.
Exactly.
I quick ran upstairs. Opened up.
Yeah, it's way too. What do you mean quick ran up? Who cares now? It's way too late now.
The screen looked like a good aquarium after I pulled it out of my pocket that it had been already in the wash cycle for 20 minutes or about 15 minutes. And I pulled it out and, you know, I hold it up. Oh, I wonder how tight this is. And I've seen the water floating around. It's like, not very tight.
Well, it's got that port on the bottom to connect your jacks to and the port on the top to connect your headphones to. Electronic devices don't like water very much.
No, oddly, they do not. They do not. And you should be able to maybe put it in
You can put it in rice or kitty litter is good.
Right, but the problem is...
Yeah, you try to turn it on too soon and while it's still damp.
Well, more importantly, how long was it in the wash? Half an hour?
Yeah.
15 minutes at least. Yeah,
15 minutes even so. And it's not just in the wash. It's also being banged around in the washing machine. So it was a lot more than just wet.
But for this, though? Dan said, do you mind if I play with it?
Yeah, there you go.
He's got it lit up.
Nice.
And he's got to buy a few parts there's a few parts that got shorted out. And it's like, he goes, I can fix it. No, I screwed up. I fully admit it.
The bullet.
Yep. It was one of those dumb things. And guess what? From now on until the day I die, I will be checking on my
Bike. You absolutely will.
Especially on those cargo pants that I wear during the week because I've always got pens and that type of stuff in there.
Too many pockets.
Yeah. I love it because, you know, when we're going out on a job, having those extra pockets is really great. Yep. I just
got
to remember.
We've got waterproof iPod cases at our store.
Right.
And we've also got a waterproof floatable speaker kit.
Nice.
So you put your iPod in it and then it floats around the pool to playing your music.
Nice.
Instead of over on the side of the pool.
Nice. So we have to take a break?
We're coming up on it. Yeah, we should. Yeah, all right. And then
we've got a couple of people on the line.
Yeah, we got a call.
But there's no point in starting it now because we're going to have to take a quick break. So if you're on the line, please stay on the line. If you're not on the line, I don't know why you're not. It's real easy to do. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, toll free at 1-800-790-0415. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 40 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we have Chris from Greece on the line. Welcome, Chris. What's your question?
Yeah, this was the first time I reconnected my iPad since I bought it so I could get the updates. And I tried like 4 or 5 times, and I kept getting timed out. So I called the Apple people, and they suggested that I turn off the security suite that I have, which is Kaspersky. And I did, and it worked. But should I have had to do that?
One of the things that the security suites do is they scan every single file that gets opened and passes through the computer for problems. As you're backing up your iPad, as you're installing a new operating system in the iPad, the security program has got to scan every single one of those files to do that. You almost always hear and read recommendations to turn off your antivirus while you're installing something because of this problem. So it would eventually work, or the installer times out and gives up trying because it's taking so long.
Okay, I just never heard you guys ever say anything about turning off your security.
When you're installing a new program, you often have to, and the program will often tell you to turn it off because you can get false messages.
Some will cause an issue. Majority won't, though.
Yeah, it's hard for the antivirus program to know if this is a good program you know you're installing or it's a bad program trying to sneak in.
Well, and in this particular case, also, there's the fact that when you attach your iPad, it looks like another hard drive. So Kaspersky is going to try to check all of the stuff on that hard drive, which is going to slow down whatever else you're doing with the thing, and that's also going to lead to a timeout.
Correct. Thanks. One more quick question on pictures. I've loaded, I've got the adapter for the iPad, and I put a lot of pictures on my iPad, but when I updated it and backed it up, now all those pictures are like in one big file, and I didn't see them on iTunes. I don't I don't know if it copied them off or why they're all in one big file now on my iPad. I don't know what to do about that.
In iTunes, when you have the iPad connected, there are several tabs, music, movies, TVs, and one of those tabs should be photos.
Yes.
And you you tell the iPad what to do with the photos. It will. You can tell it to upload them back onto your computer and put them into a Photoshop album if you're using that, or just put them into a folder full of photos. So those preferences are set in iTunes with the iPad connected.
Yeah, but I saw a new folder, but it didn't say like there was any pictures in it. It just said it was empty. So I don't know how to get those pictures that I put on.
You have to you have to turn that feature on in iTunes. You have to check that you want to upload the photos to your computer, and you have to tell it where to upload them to.
And that's in the picture tab?
Right, pictures or photos. I forget what the actual name of the tab is in iTunes when the iPad is connected.
The other issue I have with both my iTouch and my iPad, when I put it on, it doesn't let me fix those tabs first before it starts backing up and doing all the syncing. Is there a way to stop that?
Turn off the sync automatically feature, and then you have to manually sync it.
Okay.
And that's I think that's on the first screen, the general tab, when you connect it in.
Okay. Thanks, guys.
All right. Thanks, Chris.
Yep. Yeah, it's always a little annoying. You plug it in and it starts syncing, and then you make your changes and it has to sync again.
Yeah, right.
But then if you turn off automatic syncing, you may forget to manually sync it.
Right. There are a lot of little things, which is why in the iTunes software, and that's one of the reasons that folks like you have classes in there.
Yeah. It's becoming more and more complicated, and there's people that want Apple to split out the functionality. You know, it started out as a music player, okay? Then they added TV shows and movies, and now syncing and calendaring, so it syncs your calendar to your iPhone or iPad. It's trying to do too much in one program, a lot of people think. But that's oftentimes more convenient than having three or four programs you got to check. So one program to sync photos,
well, design it right.
Yeah.
Things should be turned off by default, maybe, and then you turn on the things you want.
Yeah.
Leave off what you don't want, but that's why people like you have classes.
Yep.
All right, our next caller is Dennis from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Dennis. What's your question?
I just went to the Gibson Research thing and did I've got a cheap Windows 7 desktop, Windows 7 Premium, and I did the file sharing, common ports, all service ports, and the common ports and service ports all came up as stealth. And then the file sharing said something about 139 is closed and they can't get to NetBIOS. And I think that means it's good, right?
That is good.
Now, should all Windows 7 computers be default? I mean, like if I went out and bought another Windows 7 computer, I should see the same thing because it's Windows 7.
No promises. The problem is that every manufacturer screws around with the operating system before
they
ship
preload
the machine.
Oh, okay.
But it is getting better than it used to be.
Mm-hmm. Right. But so it never hurts to go to the Gibson Research site at grc.com every once in a while.
And now what about now I've got a couple of XP laptops. Should I expect see the same good stuff with the laptop?
Not necessarily.
Not?
Windows XP is a little different. And again, it depends on the manufacturer can change things before they send it out. So there's no way we can tell you before you look what you're going
to
find.
Okay, and is there ways for me to, I'm assuming there's ways for me on this website to fix the problems or something? Or
well, the problem is not at the website, the problem is on your computer.
No, right. I mean, will they tell me how to fix my computer, or do I have to come to you guys, take my thing to the shop, and say I got this and this?
Well, it will tell you what port is open, and it will tell you what that port does, mm-hmm. and then you have to decide if you want that to be open or not, and close it yourself.
Okay.
So if port 139 is open, that means you're file sharing to the internet. So you have to decide if you want to do that or not. If you don't, you have to turn file sharing off.
I see. Okay, great. Thank you very much.
All righty, thank you. And that's one of the problems with all of this, of course. You know, there's all kinds of good utilities like mm-hmm. that on the net.
There's a great one called Hijack This.
Right, but and that's an excellent example.
That's one, though, recommend for the light of heart.
You get 40 pages of information that you have no idea what it means.
Right, if you're not technically savvy enough to know what you're looking at,
You can mess
all it can do
up.
Is cause confusion. That's very much like the people who say, oh, I was cleaning things off of my hard drive and I found this folder called Windows, and I didn't know what it did, so I deleted it. Now my machine won't boot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I found this 4-gig file called PageSys and deleted it.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. And I thought, well, I get 4 gig back on my drive, but now nothing works. So you got to know what it is you're looking at. If you don't understand it, leave it alone and get some knowledge. You know, call us or call one of these guys at the shop and bring it down to them. I said call these guys at the shop, but I didn't stop there. These guys actually do this for a living, and so they really don't dispense advice for free over the phone. This is how they make their living. This is how they feed their children. This is how they put a roof over their heads. So don't do it. I've had several people now, and it's almost beginning to annoy me, who are starting to ask me computer questions on Twitter and Facebook. I got to have some place in my life that I don't answer computer questions. So far, I'm just ignoring them. A couple people are being extremely persistent. But, you know, it is what it is, I guess. But the reality is, you know, sometimes we just want to be people. I get it. We give it away, and so everybody loves us, but they've come to expect we're going to give it away all the time. The reality is,
well, the other
is,
thing,
I
though,
is,
too, that they'll call, and I'm sure Steve gets this, too. They'll call with the question, and they get upset because we say, well, we'll call you back. Well, it's just a quick question. Yes, the questions are always quick, but it's a half hour.
Right now,
I'm in the middle of working on somebody else's computer that wants theirs back, too. And, oh, by the way, they're paying me. So, yes, I will call you back, but it will be at my discretion.
Right.
And a lot of times the issue is that's not really something we can talk you over the phone because we got to see the screens. And if we give you six steps and you miss step three, you know, things are really, really bad.
Right, and suddenly it's my fault.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I had a guy stop me in the lobby. I was coming out of a movie. And he stopped me, and he saw me from across from his face lit up. He comes over, and he doesn't say hello. He doesn't introduce himself. He doesn't ask me if I've got a minute. He just starts firing computer questions at me.
Oh,
I got really angry with him, and I feel bad about that. But he just I was relaxed and happy, and all of a sudden this guy's in my face shouting computer questions. Screw that. I just can't.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but sometimes it's about me. Get over yourself. Sometimes it's about me. And at that moment, I was relaxed. I was having a nice time. I had just seen a good movie. I was with my family. And I really didn't want to stop and put my life on hold because this guy happened to see me and had a computer question. Call the show. Send it to the newspaper. Whatever, whatever.
Email.
See us in Second Life. No, email. Don't just
We got it off of our Soundbites webpage.
Right. Get all of that stuff. Leave me alone when I'm sitting in a movie theater. I'm sorry. It's just, I get it. I get it. People have questions. They have problems. I get that. But if I had said to the guy, be happy to answer your questions, give me $20, he would have been even more insulted than he was.
Well, that's the other thing I was telling a friend. How, you know, I've gotten into the mode now, come 5 o'clock, you know, even if it's 5:01, the phone rings, I don't answer it. The weekends are mine.
Yep.
The phone can ring, and technically I am open Monday through Friday, 9 to 5.
Right.
And come Saturday, I mean, we're here, we do this show, we got to get here. That eats up, you know, a good 4 hours of our lives right in the middle of the day. We love doing it. We're here to answer your questions. Take advantage of that. But, you know, to expect me to pick up the phone on a Saturday or a Sunday, no. It's going to the answering machine. And that's just the way it is. I have to have me time. You know what? I'm going to be selfish and do it.
Yep.
I've just gotten that porky in the past months that's what I'm doing. And, you know, forget it.
You're not going to hear an argument from me. Right. I'm old, and I don't have to anymore.
Yeah.
I don't have to.
Well, I've even been sitting out on my porch.
Yep.
And they pulled into the driveway. Said, can I ask you a quick question? I said, yeah, Monday.
Yep.
Oh, I just thought you saw you sitting here. I thought I could. Come back on Monday.
They forget we're human.
We need to be. Well, we've been talking.
And
about
I mean,
that
I'm not trying to say that we're you know our egos are that big or anything else, and you know it's below me or anything else. No, it's just sometimes, folks, I got to shut down my brain too, and I enjoy my downtime too, just like folks enjoy their weekends and that type of stuff.
We got to get one of those big neon closed signs out front, but yeah, they're a little garish and gauche. But yeah, we're closed. Please.
Yeah.
Yeah. Be happy to take your question at my off time rate. $250 an hour, and you're on the clock now. All right, that's it. We're kind of done for a whole nother week. You've wasted 2 hours of your life listening to us chit-chat on the air. I want to thank every one of you called in. Thank you so much. Apologize. Well, no, nobody's waiting in the line, so we're good in that sense. So we're done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. We will be back here next week on the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's Soundbites. And don't forget, we're here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. And very shortly, we're going to come to you with a membership drive, but you can do it right now. So, thanks. See you next week.